Call Back the Past.
The last 5 years of the 19th century were years of scientific achievement and promise. The Curie's discoveries of radium and polonium shared the era with the beginnings of heart surgery, when the Frankfurt surgeon Wren mended a heart wound. The horseless carriage putted about, while in the air several successful gliding experiments had already been completed. And watching over her empire, Queen Victoria wrote in her diary one day in 1896,
"Today is the day on which I have reigned longer by a day than any English sovereign. And the people wish to make all sorts of demonstrations, which I asked them not to do until I had completed the 60 years next June. But notwithstanding this, people of all kinds and ranks sent congratulations. They were all most loyally expressed, and some very prettily."
And in the last few years of the century, the cry gold was heard once again as thousands streamed to Alaska and the Yukon as the Klondike Gold Rush got underway. On Emil Berliner's newly invented disc gramophone, the American Comedy Four sang Kentucky Babe. In the literary field, Mark Twain dominated with his personal recollections of Joan of Arc and Following the Equator, which contained interesting passages of his travels in South Africa. No less prolific was H.G. Wells with The Invisible Man and War of the Worlds. Rudyard Kipling was well represented, and so was Max Beerbohm, who now recalls the death of one of the political giants of Victorian times, W.E. Gladstone. On his deathbed, Gladstone received a message of sympathy from his beloved Oxford University. Beerbohm recounts Gladstone's reply.
"There is no expression of Christian sympathy that I could value more than that of the ancient University of Oxford, the God-fearing and God-sustaining University of Oxford. I served her, perhaps mistakenly, but to the best of my ability. My most earnest prayers are with her to the uttermost and to the last."
Another death in the last years of the 19th century was that of Alfred Nobel, who had given the world the explosive dynamite and who had ever regretted it. On his death, he tried to atone by bequeathing great sums of money for what is today known as the Nobel Prizes for Physics, Medicine and Physiology, Chemistry, Literature, and Peace.
"I love you as I never loved before. Since first I met you on the village green. Come to me, or my dream of love is o'er. I love you as I loved you when you were sweet, when you
That song of the era was often heard in vaudeville theatres, which had lately also begun to feature motion pictures as part of their bill. Still in a crude and early stage, the movies were nevertheless popular and seen in various forms and places, such as Nickelodeons, peep shows, and penny arcades, where the film of the stage success, The Widow Jones, featuring an innocent but protracted kiss between the leading man and his lady, caused a tremendous sensation. There were many self-appointed guardians of the public morals. Evangelists could be heard on practically every street corner. Billy Sunday, Henry Ironsides, William Booth, Gypsy Smith, and the team of Dwight Moody and Ira Sankey. Moody spoke and read the Beatitudes, his favorite passage from the Bible.
"Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst."
And in 1899, Ira Sankey sang.
Oh,
The fading century provided a number of firsts. Among them, the flash photo, the petrol tractor, and the aspirin. And an ever-improving phonograph, with hits like this one. There was a political battle for presidency between the Democrats and the Republicans. Democrat William Jennings Bryan, only 36 years old, based his campaign on a platform of leaving the gold standard and adopting a silver money policy. His famous Cross of Gold speech was the keystone of that policy.
The great cities are in favor of the gold standard. We reply that the great cities rest upon our broad and fertile prairies. Burn down your cities and leave our farms, and your cities will spring up again as if by magic. But destroy our farms, and the grass will grow in the streets of every city of the country. If they dare to come out in the open field and defend the gold standards, the good thing, we will answer their demand by saying to them, you shall not press down upon the brow of labor this crown of thorns. You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
His Republican opponent, McKinley, defended the gold standard.
This contest, patriotism is above party, and national honor is dearer than any party name. The currency and credit of the government are good now and must be kept good forever. Our trouble is not with the character of the money that we have, but with the threat to the basis. We have the same currency that we had in 1892. Good the world over and unquestioned by any people.
McKinley won the election and became America's 25th and last president of the 19th century. He barely made it into the 20th, being assassinated in 1901. Apart from glider flights, Count Zeppelin's airships made aviation history at a time when recorded sound was boosted by early successful experiments with magnetic recording.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime girl. Send me a kiss, my wife. Baby, my heart's on.
Bernard Shaw's Caesar and Cleopatra, Edmund Rostand's Cyrano de Bergerac, and Arthur Wing Pinero's Trelawney of the Wells were popular on stage, but it was the character of Sherlock Holmes, as played by William Gillette, that caught the theatergoer's imagination. Here's Gillette in a typical piece of dialogue.
Where the deuce is your second waistcoat button, and what the deuce is yesterday's boot on your head doing in today's lapel, and why the deuce do you wear the expression of a poor alligator?
Marvelous,
Marvelous. Elementary, my dear fellow, elementary.
In South Africa, the last few years of the 19th century provided a situation that would rapidly worsen into war between Britain and Boer. The Jameson Raid in 1895-96 did much to precipitate the war, which finally flared up as the century came to a close. Among the names of South African towns and villages, which suddenly sprang into international prominence, was that of Mafeking, where Baden-Powell was being besieged by the Boers. Baden-Powell had to resort to subterfuge to survive, and here recalls...
We had around Mafeking at first some 10 to 12,000 Boers under General Cronje, and another strong force was engaged up north against Plumer's column at Thule. So in order to get more of them, if possible, busy up here and away from the southern ports, I wrote a letter to an Englishman who had settled within the Transvaal border north of Mafeking. I knew, as a matter of fact, he had died, and that, therefore, the letter would be opened by the post office people. So I wrote, as if from some friend of his, telling him that a secret British force was going to make a raid into the Transvaal, passing close by his farm. But this was a dead secret, and he must not tell a soul about it. Consequence was a column of some 1,200 Boers went to the place and stayed there a long time waiting for this secret force. I met their commandant a year or two later and heard all about it from him. In the middle of his yarn, he looked at me suspiciously and suddenly asked, "Did you write that letter?"
Back the Past was devised and presented by Percy Seif and comes to you by courtesy of the Springbok Radio Preservation Society of South Africa.